Welcome to today's episode with David Senra. Before we get into it, I first would like to ask a small favor from you, and that would be to subscribe wherever you are listening to this. If it's on YouTube, subscribe on YouTube. If it's on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, click subscribe so you will get more of these podcasts. It would mean the world to me. I would truly appreciate it. And then while you're at it, you can share this episode with a friend because this episode was phenomenal. This episode features David Senra. David is the creator of the Founders Podcast, which deconstructs history's greatest founders and high performers. Basically, he reads an autobiography of a famous person like Jay-Z or Michael Jordan, and then he does a podcast about it where it's just him talking to the camera, or rather the microphone, for an hour or sometimes even 2 hours. And currently there's over 280 episodes to check out. I really like the one with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I recommend starting there, but it's quickly become one of my favorite podcasts to listen to because David is a walking shot of espresso. It's incredible. You'll listen to why he drinks so much espresso and why his energy just exudes and comes through whenever he is podcasting or talking on the microphone. In this episode, we talk about David's troubled upbringing, the importance of connecting with yourself, why he's rewatched a Larry Bird video on doubters thousands of times, and why he believes we're at the beginning of the podcasting industry. This was a jam-packed episode filled with wisdom, and I'm incredibly grateful for David for spending the time. Like I mentioned at the start, please hit subscribe. Please share this episode with a friend if you did enjoy it, or share it on your story or on Twitter. That would mean the world to me. This episode is brought to you by My First Million. My First Million is one of my favorite podcasts because it's two entrepreneurs who have sold their businesses, and now Sean has sold a second business in the Milk Road, and they document and talk about the process of business, entrepreneurship, but then they're also talking about the latest happenings, and they make it entertaining and interesting, and their back and forth and dynamic is so good. So I highly recommend that if you're interested in entrepreneurship, technology, business, which if you're listening to this podcast with David Senra, you probably are. So I hope you enjoy My First Million, but until then, I hope you enjoyed this episode with David. David, thank you for coming on the podcast. I am so honored and thrilled for you being here because I've spent so much time preparing for you and preparing for this conversation because I'm such a fan of you and your work, and hopefully people will be as well by the end of this conversation.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
So, 10 years old, you light a newspaper on fire. What happens next?
Okay, that's the Thomas Edison episode I just did, right? The one where I found this like really old biography. I don't remember how old, but I love reading old biographies. And what you'll see is like a lot of the new popular biographies are actually made, books are made of books, right? And so I'll get back to your question, but I've been thinking about this recently because I found one of the greatest books I've ever read recently, where like everybody knows who John Rockefeller is, one of the most, you know, well-known entrepreneurs in history. When people say, hey, I read a biography of John Rockefeller, they're like, hey, I read Titan, right? Which is like this 700, 800 page. It's fantastic, right? But it's 700 or 800 pages. It takes a long time to get through. So I've read Titan twice now. I've done two different episodes on it. So every time I read a book, I'll make a podcast about it. And then if I reread it, I'll make another podcast about it. And the second time through, I was like, you know what? I need to go through the bibliography and see what the source material was. And going through that material, I actually found this little known really hard to find biography of John D. Rockefeller that was written like 40 years ago. It's called John D., the Founding Father of the Rockefellers. I actually now, that's become one of my main book recommendations for entrepreneurs because it's like 250 pages, so it's a lot more manageable, but it goes into way more detail on the strategy that Rockefeller used to build his business. And so it was absolutely fantastic. And so I had the idea, I was like, I should do this for Edison as well. There's a bunch of stories. I had read The Wizard of Menlo Park, which is the most famous or well-known of the Thomas Edison biographies. And I just stumbled upon, you know, that old biography. And I just thought there were so many interesting stories in that Thomas Edison book. And that's like the third book on Thomas Edison I've read, right? One of the things that popped out in the book, before I get to just how crazy that story at the beginning is, is the fact that, and you see this a lot in with founders, it's like they're learning machines. They are obsessed with finding as much information as possible, because entrepreneurs and investors are some of the few people in the world. They obviously, one, they read a lot more than most people do, and they listen to educational podcasts a lot more than the average person does. And the reason they do this is because they're literally building machines in which they can profit from their knowledge. And that's the form of like your podcast, your company, whatever it is, right? So you see this in the, Edison was like 8 years old or something, or 11 years old. I forgot how old he was. He is working on the railroads, which is like the great technology of his day, right? And every day they'd have a stopover in Detroit. And Edison had, you know, it's amazing that he had this desire, this hunger for knowledge. He'd go to, he didn't have a lot of money. He spent money. I think it was like $1, $2, whatever it was. He was a member of a library, right? And he's like, well, if I'm going to have a few hours off in the middle of my day, I can't go anywhere. I'm just going to read every single book in the library. Not like, oh, I'm going to read the science fiction section, or maybe, no, I'm going to read every single book in the library. And there's a bunch of examples in the books that I've read, and I've read almost 300 biographies of entrepreneurs for the podcast before, where there's entrepreneurs that, like Edwin Land, goes to Harvard, reads every single book they have on light, because that's what he wanted to dedicate his life to. Then he's like, okay, read everything here, dropped out of Harvard, moves to New York City, goes to New York City Public Library, is there right when the door opens, reads every single book on light in the New York City Public Library. So to answer your question is, there's a crazy story, this Thomas Edison biography that I just cannot believe, where he like burns a barn or something like that, accidentally lights something on fire, right? And his dad decides the way to punish him is to put, they live in a small, you know, rural town. He's going to put up notices all over the town saying, hey, come to the town square Saturday morning and watch me beat the shit out of my son. And not only is that, okay, what kind of father would do that? But then it was like a main event. Like people in the town was like, hey, what are you doing Saturday morning? We're going to go down and see the Edison boy get his ass kicked. My dad's still alive. You know, most of my family's dead. He's like the last surviving member of his family. Like his parents are dead. His siblings are dead. You know, he came over from Cuba. It's like, he's the last one, right? We have a good relationship. I was on the phone with him last night. I went for a walk, called him, you know, I don't fault him for what he did. You know, I couldn't imagine being raised like by the parents he was raised, and obviously he made mistakes with me. But to answer your question is, my dad would beat the shit out of me all the time, and my older brother got it worse than I did. You know, he's the firstborn; I'm the middle child, and both my parents did. And I don't understand. I have two kids. I would never do this to them. Like they would beat us with belts, shoes, switches on. Like they make you go to a tree and they have, I didn't even know what a switch was. It's like a branch and you have to pick the branches they're going to beat you with, which is just, again, having kids, it's like, I would never do that to my children. I don't understand that. As I got older, I was obviously very pissed about it and mad about it when I was younger. As I got older, you have more context, like who their parents were, both sets of parents. My grandparents are just like shitty people in general, like, you know, not good people. So then you have one person that's not good, married another person that's not good, then they procreate, and then they're like, what kind of environment were they raised in? So it doesn't excuse the behavior by any means, but I just, it's part of getting older and having understanding. It's like, man, I wouldn't do that. Part of, there's a great lesson that I read, the founder of Dunkin' Donuts autobiography. He's writing when he's like 80 years old, 84 maybe. And he talks about that. Like the reason he had insane drive to build Dunkin' Donuts and all the businesses that he built before Dunkin' Donuts. Like that guy started working full time when he was like 11. He didn't take a day off till he was like 23. Like literally not one day off. And part of that was because like he was raised in poverty and his dad was able bodied, but wasn't hardworking. And so he has a great line in that book that says something like, sometimes the best lessons we learn are from the weaknesses of otherwise good people. He's like, my dad was a good hit Dunkin' Donuts founder, Bill, I forgot his last name, Rosenberg or something like that. He's like, my dad was a good person, but he had a weakness. And he's like, so I had this internal drive that my kids are never going to experience like that level of pain that comes from poverty, not being able to pay the bills. So to answer your question, I lit something on fire in the house. Well, I shouldn't have done that. Like, that's obviously stupid. The house was not in danger of burning down. And like, that's maybe the worst ass whipping he gave me. And I knew it was bad because my mom like tried to get him to stop and like jump in front of him. So that's the answer to your question.
You know, it's funny because I hear you talk about on the podcast a lot how you had way more resentment 8 years ago or 10 years ago when your daughter was just being born, and now you've come more at peace with it. And I can't help but notice in the time frame is you reading 300 biographies and autobiographies. So what do you think the biggest difference is in making you feel more at peace with the incredibly difficult hand you were dealt?
The weird thing is, that's a good term, at peace. Like, reading biographies to me, it's like I just did a two-part series on Kobe Bryant, right? And there's a lot of funny stories. I read like a 600-page biography of Kobe Bryant, which is hilarious because, like, you'd go, you know, this is like the mid-90s, and you'd go to his closet and it'd just be like stacks of VHS tapes. So, like, physical, like, today's generation's like, if you had physical copies of YouTube videos, like, that'd be the equivalent, right? And the VHS tapes are just like game tape of Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, like all these great players. And Kobe would just watch them over and over and over and over again. In fact, they interviewed his high school girlfriend. They're like, what was it like dating Kobe Bryant in high school? They're like, well, we wouldn't go on dates. Our dates were I go to his house and watch game tapes of Michael Jordan. So what I feel a biography is, like, they're... First of all, like, what I find interesting is, like, the people that live lives so remarkable that somebody wrote a book about them, right? All read biographies too. Mm. Like, it is some of the highest value reading that you can possibly do. Pick any of the people that you admire the most, whoever it is, and I'm not saying who it should be, but like for me, it's like Steve Jobs, Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, like these kind of people. Charlie Munger's like, I've read hundreds of biographies. To me, Charlie Munger may be the wisest person. One of the wisest people that's still alive, you know? Mm-hmm. And this guy's telling you with his actions, like, what's important to him. He's like, hey, you can pick up a book and you can just learn so much. So I do find the act of reading biographies and continuing to do so weirdly comforting because, when you finish the book, right, you saw the entire – it's like watching game tapes. I'm going to tie it back to what Kobe was doing. It's like watching game tape of somebody's life, right? And you see so many parallels with your own life. You realize that history doesn't repeat. Human nature does. And we're just all experiencing the same thing. We all want to. We all have like similar desires, similar, you know, ways we want our life to be like to play out on this like magnificent odyssey that we call life. And so, by watching game tape in the form of reading biographies over and over again, one, you see, it is comforting because one, you're reminded constantly, like memento mori, like you're temporary. You're gonna die. I talk to so many entrepreneurs or people that want to be entrepreneurs because I meet them through the podcast, and they're like, you know, like, I have this idea and, you know, I just don't know what to do, or like, I'm worried about, you know, all things that don't matter. Like, what if I fail, or what will this person think? It's just like, and my answer is like, you're going to fucking die. Do you understand that? You are temporary. 100 years from now, you and everybody you know will be turned to dust. You have nothing to lose. To quote Steve Jobs, you're already naked. Go for it. You fail. No one is thinking about you. You fail, you might think about it. I promise you, everybody else is self-absorbed. And what the other thing I like that's comforting is that these are some of the people I read biographies of. These are some of the most intelligent, driven, formidable people to ever live. Mm-hmm. And you see them struggle and make mistake and have doubts. And that is, it's like, oh, okay, this is not
it's
a unique
the
experience
opposite,
to me.
It's the opposite of social media, right? I think that was such an important point in that you are allowed to see people at their worst, but that people we esteem to be great. On social media, we see people often just present their best selves. But
yes,
in biographies and autobiographies, you see people at their worst selves, but you still understand them to be great. There's an important nuance there.
The one book that I recommend the most is really hard to find too. It's episode 200 of Founders. It'll be episode 300 of Founders. It'll be episode 400 of Founders because I'm going to read it every 100 episodes. It's James Dyson's autobiography. He's written two. The first one, I read the second one. It's fantastic. That's episode 205. But he wrote that one when he's like 75. The first one is called Against the Odds, an autobiography by James Dyson, right? He's like 45, 50 years old, right? He has just gone through 14 years. The reason I recommend that book the most for entrepreneurs or anybody, because anybody wants to do something of value, that means by default, if it's valuable, it's going to be difficult. And if it's difficult, you're going to run into so many opportunities where you want to quit. I saw what you just posted yesterday on Twitter when I talked about, like, hey, you don't have to be the smartest. You don't have to be the best. You don't have to be the most athletic. You don't have to be all this. It's like, you just have to not quit. Like, I repeat this over and over again, a main theme of the history of entrepreneurship is that time carries most of the weight. So many people quit before they can – they have to stay in the game long enough to get lucky, right? And so the reason James Dyson's book is so incredible is because he lets you in on the struggle, on the fact that, hey, he had this idea to do a vacuum, a bagless vacuum cleaner, right? And then he had all, he's like, how difficult it could be? Makes the invention, patents it, tries to license it, doesn't work out, tries to sell it, doesn't work out, has a partner, that doesn't work out. He just goes through this 14 years of struggle. He writes the book right after that 14 years of struggle, and he's like, listen, I could tell you that perseverance is important, and I could tell you that doggedness is very important, right? But he's like, it's also terribly disheartening. And he goes, there was times he made 5,127 prototypes before he got it right. How many people on the fucking planet would quit at 2,000, at 2,500, at 2,900, at 4,500, 5,127 prototypes? He's like, listen, you understand? I started working on this vacuum cleaner. My son is born. By the time I finish it, he is like in high school. He's like, do you know how many nights he worked in the back? He had this, he calls it the carriage house, which I think for like Americans, it's like, you know, a detached garage essentially. And he's like, do you know how many times I spent the entire day building prototypes in that carriage house, coming upstairs completely filthy and lay in bed and cry myself to sleep to think that I will just go on making prototype after prototype till I die? Not to mention he's got like two mortgages on his house, which is funding the company. And so that's why that book is so important, to actually get inside your brain. It's like, it is not supposed to be easy. There's going to be many times that you're going to want to quit. And here's the thing. None of this works. Entrepreneurship doesn't work. Building a podcast doesn't work unless you can trust your own judgment. Because only you know whether the even harder part. Sometimes the right decision is to quit because you're on the wrong path. Mm. Right? So all this comes down to, no one's here to save you. You must do the work necessary to trust your own judgment. And I think a tool to be able to trust your own judgment is to study the great work of the past, see how they thought about things. So like right now, I'm so deep into this, you know, 6 years into the podcast, I've been working on it every day for 4 years. Not only do I read every day, but I also reread past highlights every day. I'm completely obsessed. So now by doing so, it's like when I find somebody I'm interested, like an Edwin Land, David Ogilvy, Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, Steve Jobs, what it is, it's like I don't just read one book. I literally read every fucking book I can find on them. And then I reread them. And then I'll make podcast after podcast. I just did I've read every single book I could find on Edwin Land. Edwin Land is the person that Steve Jobs patterned much of his career off. There was a Steve Jobs before Steve Jobs, right? I've read 5 biographies of him. I've read 3 of those biographies twice, and I've done 8 episodes on him. So now I have an idea. Like when I run into something in my own life, I'm like, I can build this, like there's like a little Edwin Land on my shoulder. It's like, what would Edwin Land tell me right now? I'm going through this right now because the podcast is exploding. I have all these opportunities. And his whole thing, Edwin Land, is like the power of concentration and focus, right? Mm. Also something Steve Jobs, he's like, listen, there's 1,000 different, I had 1,000 good ideas. I can only do one. Like that is so difficult how to do. And so I asked myself, like, what would Edwin Land think? What would Charlie Munger, the whole idea for founders, Charlie Munger always reminds me, don't take your eye off the ball, because he's like, find a simple idea and take it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that humans learned from the humans that came before them, right? And we did that before there was written, like before writing, they mentioned writing. Then once there was books, we were able to like unshackle us from time. So not only could we learn from people, the older people in our lives, but now we can learn from people long dead, right? So that idea is very simple, right? Then you study entrepreneurs, you realize the best entrepreneurs, they have deep historical knowledge about the history of entrepreneurship, right? So it's like, oh, that's a simple idea. That is an idea that's not going to change. This generation is going to learn from the smart ones, are going to learn from the people that came before them. The future generations are going to do. So that's a simple idea that I'm taking very fucking seriously. More seriously than anybody else in the goddamn world.
Well, you're living proof of it. I'm curious, how do you mentioned before about the importance of picking the right heroes. That's how you ended Jim O'Shaughnessy's podcast.
Yes.
And it's a topic, founders is basically an ode to all of your heroes in a way, some might say. How does somebody pick the right ones?
So I didn't have that answer, right, before I started doing it. Part of it is just, again, I think read more biographies. Like I think all successful people do. They read other things too. But if you go to these people's houses or if you ask these questions, and you might want to ask them, it's like, what's on your bookshelf? Like there might be science fiction. There might be other history books. There's going to be biographies without a doubt, right? And part of that is just, hey, this is like, these are all personal things where when I have these conversations with founders, they're like, hey, what do you think about this? It all starts with like who you are, what's important to you. Like there is no, I talked about this on when I just reread 0 to 1. He says at the very beginning, he's like, there's no formula for successful entrepreneurship, right? It's like the personality, like as you build your business, which is in the form of a podcast, right? That is only going to work if it's authentic to who you are as a person, Mm-hmm. So therefore, it can't be like some, here, do these 10 steps. No, the world is way more complex than that. So the only way I know to do that is like by seeing a bunch of different examples. And over time, there's just certain people that resonate with me. Like one guy, I didn't even know who existed, right? I read every single one of Warren Buffett's shareholder letters. That's like the size of a textbook. And I'm about to do it again in the next few months. It's going to take me a long time. But they're very valuable. And the reason I did that is because, well, first of all, Warren Buffett, you know, has the most successful investment record in human history. Clearly, that guy has, you know, some information that could be valuable to us. He puts out all his shareholder letters for free. You could buy the Kindle version for $2.99. You could buy the, I have the, both the Kindle and the physical version as well, for like $20 or $25. And like, there's ideas worth billions in there, right? And so he's introduced me, the reason I think Warren's so important to listen to is because he's done way more work than anybody else in like analyzing different businesses and different founders. So if in his shareholder letters and his talks, and Charlie Munger does the same thing, all the entrepreneurs really do the same thing, they will tell you who they admire. They will tell you who they learn from. And so Warren Buffett mentioned this guy. He's like, he called him a genius. This guy named David Ogilvy, right? And I'm like, wait a minute. Like, most people think Warren Buffett's a genius. I certainly do. He's saying this guy's a genius. I need to find, like, who the hell is David Ogilvy? And then I learned, like, this guy's one of the advertising agency pioneers, right? And Warren made a bunch of money investing in his company, more than David made, actually. And then I started reading every single book. David's one of the best writers. Maybe he is the best writer I've come across in the podcast, right? And I just thought he was not, like, as narrowly focused in one domain as, like, a Warren Buffett is. But, like, David Ogilvy had charisma. He was an excellent writer. He was an excellent speaker. He was cool. I find myself reading and getting to knowing him, and he's funny, and he's, like, unbelievably witty, and he's really hardworking, and he's built this great company, and he has this great life experience. I'm like, I want to be like this dude. Like, he became a personal hero. I was like, this is amazing. And that's another guy I've read, like, five or six books on, whatever it was. In fact, I just sent a bunch of Christmas gifts to friends. And one book that I give all the time is this book called The Unpublished David Ogilvy. It's like 200 pages long. It's a series of internal memos and letters that was never meant for public consumption that he had written over the multiple decades as he's building his business, right? And then I think he turns like 70 years old or 75 or whatever, and they decided to collect all this and publish it and gave it to him as a gift. And then people thought it was so excellent that then now you can buy it. And it just has like a condensed version of all his thinking. And I find myself picking it up and just reading a few pages and be like, wow, like I'm in the mind of David Ogilvy. So the only answer to your question would be you got to expose yourself to a ton. You know, I might go through 200 or 300 to find 5 or 10 heroes.
Hmm. One thing that you didn't mention, which I'm surprised by, is connecting with yourself is an important part in figuring out your heroes, in the sense of you've quoted Jay-Z. This is a really important quote, I think. It's always been most important for me to figure out my space. Instead of checking out what everyone else is up to minute by minute, technology is making it easier to connect to other people, but maybe harder to keep connected to yourself. And that's essential, being connected to yourself, for any artist. Because your love of founders really started because you loved to read as a young child, and mm-hmm. and how important that played in your life. And it's like, you connect it to yourself to find your heroes. How do you go about connecting with yourself today?
So you mentioned social media too. It's like I was actually talking to Ben Wilson, who also reads a bunch of biographies. He has How to Take Over the World. It's his podcast. And we were on the phone the other day for like an hour, or maybe Zoom. I can't remember. I think it might have
been Zoom. Episode 288. Just interviewed him.
Oh, did you? Okay. So we both read a ton of biographies, and we both arrived at the same conclusion independently that it's like I stick my nose in these books over and over again. Then I'll reread my highlights over and over again. When I pop my head up and I go into social media, whether it's Twitter, whether it's anywhere else, it's like I don't find anything that's smarter than the stuff I read. So to answer your questions, like I try not to spend that much time consuming anything other than biographies, because I also want to live a balanced life. Like, I want to be extremely good at my domain, right? I want to be world-class in my domain. But I also am married. I want to be a good husband. I'm a father. I want to be a good father. I want to have fun. I want to have relationships. I want to experience life. So that's why I always say endorse my blueprint, because he's the only person I've ever studied. This is episode 222 that actually, like, Matt got close to mastering life. You know, super smart, unbelievably wealthy, refused to chase more business opportunities after he already had more money he could spend in a lifetime, because that would take him time away from taking care of his health, from spending time with his kids, from spending time with his wife, from having an adventure. Like, he had his Nassim Taleb writes the foreword to Ed Thorpe's autobiography, which is called A Man for All Markets. And he says, Nassim Taleb says, he goes, this book reads like a thriller. And it does. Like, when I get to the end of my life, I want my life story to read like a thriller. Not just, hey, you know, I spent all my day reading like biographies. I obviously spent a large part of that. So, and then I spent a lot of time alone. Like, I am introverted. Obviously, I think anybody that reads as much as I do is probably, you know, closer to the introversion spectrum than they are to the extroversion spectrum. I go for long walks. I live in Miami, very close to the beach. So I'll walk on the beach with no input but the sound of the ocean. Not phone calls, not music, not podcasts, right? You shower. Like, I take long – I've just been doing this recently. It's like, you know, 20, 30-minute hot showers. I just literally sit there and no input, just like, what is on my mind? Just thinking about – there's a lot of input through podcasts and books, which is like my personal curriculum, right? But then you got to also pause that and be like, okay, these are thoughts of other people. I need time for my subconscious for those ideas to mix with my own mind. And then what's the result of my own thinking? So if you don't have, I got this idea from David Ogilvy. He would take like long bike rides, and like usually walking is like something that's common in history. They talk about walking as an aid to thought, right? To answer your question, like, I think that was an excellent observation by Jay-Z. Jay-Z is also, I want to meet Jay-Z. Like, people always like, who would you want to have dinner with? Jay-Z's at the, you know, close to the top of that list, just because he's another one of these people. It's like unbelievably wealthy, but his life looks like an adventure. And if you think about where he started and how unlikely and how many times he had to make smart decision after smart decision, there's so many times where he could have, you know, fallen off. And he just keeps figuring things out and keeps getting to the next level. Now you're talking about over 30 years. That's admirable to me. So part of that is just you've got to carve out alone time. However you do it. You could be at the gym. Like, I listen to a lot of podcasts when I'm at the gym. Sometimes I listen to nothing, you know. But I think spending time alone, and if you can, it's difficult, obviously, when you start to have a family and other obligations. But even if it's an hour a day, I think that's invaluable.
Could you take us through the beginning stages of the podcast? I feel like it's very easy to keep going when everyone is saying how great you are and you've got all this attention. What was the first 4 years like, and how did you know this was your thing? Did you know right away? Was it something that happened over time?
Okay, so I got the idea for the podcast because I was listening to Tim Ferriss's podcast, and he had this guy named Jocko Willink. This is like 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then Jocko went on Joe Rogan's podcast, and I had read Jocko's book, Extreme Ownership, which I think is the best single book on leadership. And Jocko, both Joe and Tim told Jocko, you need to start a podcast. And Jocko's podcast was completely different than anything I've ever seen before. It's still like this today, but now he does more interviews and stuff. But at the beginning, it was just him and his co-host. Co-host doesn't talk. It's like 5% or less. It's mostly just Jocko speaking. And Jocko would just be reading excerpts from books and talking about what he learned from all these books. And his podcast is, he describes, as a course on the history of military history, right? Because somebody had asked him one time on Twitter, like, hey, when are you going to teach? Like, you know all this stuff. You read all these books about the history of military and how it applies to, like, these leadership lessons. You know, you should teach a college-level course, right? That's what you would have done in the past. What's the point? You can lecture to 300 people at a time. You can lecture to 3 million like he does, you know? And so his response was excellent. He's like, the podcast is my military history course. Mm-hmm. Founders is a course on the history of entrepreneurship. I'm not the teacher, I'm the conduit, right? The teachers are the life stories of history's greatest entrepreneurs who are talking directly to you. So when I saw Jocko's podcast, I was a huge love history, right? Even if it's not the history of entrepreneurship. And I was learning so much on his podcast. I was like, this is the best format I've ever seen. I've been a podcast fiend for years, right? Maybe a decade before then. A little less than a decade, because podcasting in its current form wasn't even around a decade by that time. Some of the podcasts were so amazing. I went out and bought the book. Then I'd read the book. I'm like, holy shit, this is fantastic. But even the episodes where I listened to, where I didn't read the book, I was learning so much. And I was like, dude, I read all the time. Like, I should do this, but for biographies. He did autobiographies of people in war, right? And so I started out doing just like great biographies. I read like Ben Franklin and Nelson Mandela. Then I narrowed it very soon, realized, oh, I'm going to niche down and just do biographies of entrepreneurs because nobody else was doing it. And I was shocked there was not another podcast named Founders. And I was like, that name is like self-explanatory. Like, it, I was like, this is perfect. And I had a bunch of different other names. The first name was Autotelic, which is comes from this book called Flow, which is very common, like commonly read. I don't know how to pronounce the guy's like Russian or Czechoslovakian. There's no way I can pronounce his name. It's like Mikhail, whatever. There you go. And he had this word Autotelic, which is an act that you do for the sake of itself. Reading for me is just, I do because I love it. It's forced meditation. It's amazing. And what I realized is like, one, I didn't know I read so much more than the average person does. Now I, the longer I go, the deeper that understanding gets. And I realize, well, if I just read all the time, I'm doing something that most people won't, and I do it because I love to do it. And if I could package up some of the lessons I learned and make it publicly facing, like that's valuable to other people. And I know it's valuable to other people because Jocko's podcast is valuable to me. Mm-hmm. And so I started doing that. If you look at my upload schedule, it's like very intermittent. It's like, you know, I'd go like 3 months without doing one. They're not very good. I go back and I'm like, David, speed it up. Like, why are you so slow? Cut that part out. Like, and that's part of like growing, knowing you're getting good at something, right? And then I was doing it for a while. Then I couldn't figure out how to make money on it. Just doing it in my spare time. Then I started doing like some like ads. Like I did like Audible ads and ads for like Blinkist. And then the crazy shit is like, I didn't even know people were listening. And then people would like buy things, and you could see it. Like I remember like Blinkist would show you like the dashboard, like. Some dude in Japan bought a subscription because he listened to my podcast. That's weird. Like, who the hell's in Japan listening to me? I'm just in my room by myself reading all the time. That's pretty miraculous, right? And then I was like, I just liked it. And then I started getting weird emails and reviews, right? And so at the time, when I first started my podcast feed, I didn't fill it out correctly. So it used to say Founders Podcast by Founders, right? I didn't put my name in there. I didn't know what I was doing. And then I got this dude that had like went and like searched who owned the domain and then found the email associated with it. And he's like, I don't know if you're just purposely trying to be hidden, but I'm obsessed with your podcast. I wanted to reach out to you. And he's like, can I send you money on PayPal or something like that? I'm like, what the fuck is happening here? Then some dude was like, he wrote like a 2000 or like a 1,000 word review on Apple Podcasts about the podcast and how it's changing his life. And I'm like, what the? Because, you know, like podcasting, especially when you don't know anybody, like it's very lonely. There's no feedback. It's not like you tweet something out. It's like, or there's no view count. You have no fucking idea what's happening. But even today, the analytics on the back end are terrible. And like, that's part of what I like about it. Because you just focus on what you want to do and, you know, everything else take care of itself. So then just along the line, I just talked about this in Paul Graham episode 275 when I spent a few weeks rereading Paul Graham's episodes or essays. And I just like, dude, everything I'd done up until this point, like you do because to make money, that's where I think when you start out your entrepreneurship journey, that's like, I just want to make money, right? And then you realize the best entrepreneurs, they're like mission driven. I didn't have a mission. I didn't know like what I wanted to do. And I just talked to a friend of mine the other day. We've known each other for 20 years. And he goes, I remember we went outside the restaurant and you said, I'm going to try to have a career by reading books. And he goes, I thought it was the dumbest thing I ever heard.
When was that?
2018. This is right when I'm about to go full time on it.
Gotcha.
And now he sees everything that's going on. He's like, I can't believe you fucking pulled this off. Like, I thought it was the stupidest thing I ever heard. Like, yeah, okay, David, you're going to make money by reading books. This is insane. So anyways, in 2018, I was like, man, you know, I'd done, you know, I don't know, 20 or 30 episodes, something like that. I was like, I really like doing this. Like, I'm really obsessed with doing it. I don't know the path to make money. I'm married. I have a daughter. I didn't have my son yet, but I'd always been like a compulsive saver. So I had like a lot of long runway. And I was like, all right, I'm willing to spend my last dollar to try to make this like my full-time job and a business and like my life's passion. Right. And I also have like a lot of self-confidence and borderline arrogance where I'm like, I just don't believe if I don't work on anything else, and I spend 7 days a week only thinking about this, and I'm willing to work as much as I have to do this, I don't believe I can't figure out how to make this work. I just have to trust in something. Steve Jobs talks about this, man. He's like, listen, you only connect the dots looking backwards. Mm-hmm. So at some point, if you're going to make the jump, you have to put your faith in something. You could put your faith in God, the universe, yourself, whatever, but you've got to jump. And most people are never going to make that jump. So my whole thing was like, okay, I'm willing to work 7 days a week on this, put more time and effort into any of this, and I think I could take the lessons that I'm learning as I'm reading these books to help build my business, which I take a lot of the ideas I learn, right, and apply it to founders. And worst case scenario, I will run out of money, I'll get a job, and I'll do it at night. And then that'll just extend my runway. And so people are like, oh, would you do founders for free? It's like, I fucking paid to do it. Do you understand? I went for 2 years where my bank account was going lower every month. Like, oh, that's not good. Lower, 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 until 2020 is when it was finally making enough money to pay my bills, right?
Wow.
And that's – so I'm taking my own advice. Like, stay in the game long enough for you to get lucky. And the last 18 months – let's say the last – I started 2022 – saying, I know I make a good podcast, right? I know it's valuable because the quality of the people that listen, it's not a bunch of scrubs listening to founders. It's like literally billionaires, people with hundreds of millions of dollars, people that are super famous, people that like, and every single top VC firm listens, a ton of private founders that have private companies that make a ton of money. These are not scrubs. And if these people are saying, hey, this is valuable, and a lot of these people are saying it, you know, publicly, like Patrick from Invest Like the Best, who like exploded my career. That dude can literally like look at his guest list. He can get anybody he wants. His podcast is billionaire investor, very successful investor, public CEO company, and then me. Like,
What episode got the most views? That's the crazy part.
Yeah. So far, well, I'm still on. I don't know if I've overtaken people. I'm going to try. I've been talking. I was like, go listen to that podcast. I want to overtake them. But even if it's not, like, I was shocked at how popular it was. And Patrick also put a lot of his energy and resources behind it. Like, if you listen to Patrick's episode that came out today, he tells people, he's like, go listen to Founders. Like, now I'm part of his podcast network, which is really cool because I listened to his podcast for years as a fan. And then now, like, I became friends with him because of this other guy, Sam Hinkie, who was also like super famous and super respected, used to be the former GM of 76ers. My friend Mitchell, who I was just on the phone with, said you've been DMing with him, Mitchell Baldridge.
Yes.
Mitchell knows Sam too. Mitchell says Sam is the smartest person that Mitchell knows, and that Sam has a gigabrain. Sam is the one that connected me with Patrick, right? So like, that's how I knew I was onto something where it's like, these people can learn from anybody they want, and they're choosing to spend their very valuable time listening to my podcast. And that's why I'm fucking obsessed about making it as valuable as possible. It's like, listen, there's a lot of entrepreneurship podcasts, right? A lot of them come out once a week like I do. I'm telling you right now, I refuse to, like, every 1 hour of recorded audio, that means I've read for at least 20 hours, right? The amount of, that's how I'm paranoid to make sure that it's valuable to other people. I just put out a podcast today, or last night, that's like 40 minutes, 45 minutes long on Steve Jobs, what it was like working with Steve Jobs. I've read that book 3 times. I am not messing around here. Like, I am having fun, but I am taking this deadly serious because I know the valuable people that listen, and I have to respect their time. And so that means I'm willing to do much more work before I even sit down to record. So I need to answer questions. So 2018, I just snap. I'm reading Paul Graham's essay, How to Do What You Love, and he talks about, listen, man, there's billions of people that have ever existed, maybe a few hundred thousand ever figure out how to do something they truly love, right? And the idea, if you just look at the math, it's like we have 168 hours a week. You know, let's say you're asleep for, you know, let's say a third of your life you're sleeping, right? In a 24-hour day, you sleep for 8 hours, you work for 8 hours, you do whatever you want for 8 hours. That means our life, because we don't, you know, sleeping is just, we're asleep. Our conscious life is 16 hours a day. We're going to spend half of that working on average. And you're telling me I'm supposed to spend half my life doing something I don't want to do. And then I combine what Paul Graham was saying about how to do what you love. Excellent essay. I think I start episode 275 with that. That's going to be the most downloaded episode I've ever done, by the way. That Paul Graham episode went wild. And then I combined it with Jeff Bezos. Hmm. When you read The Everything Store, and he talks about this in public, he came up with the single best way to think about a decision framework on how to do like what you love. And he's like, listen, before he started Amazon, most people don't know, Jeff has been a genius since he was like 5. Like, his Montessori teacher was like, this dude's crazy focused. Like, they were literally, in Montessori, you go from like, let's say, you know, one section of the classroom to the next section as you move on. That's how they like progress the learning. They're like, he'd be so focused on what he was working on, he wouldn't respond to our prompts to move on to the next thing. So we'd have to pick up the chair and move him. Mm. That's how focused. And he winds up being the valedictorian of Palmetto High School, which is in Miami. Or I think it's Palmetto. I can't remember. He graduated high school in Miami. And he gives his valedictorian speeches about how he wants to move manufacturing into lower Earth orbit. Sounds like Blue Origin, right? Like, who the hell is, like, he won, like, this other project. I think it was, like, 11 or 13. Gets to go tour the NASA facility where they build the rockets in Alabama. Like, the dude has been a smart forever, way before Amazon. So he winds up working for this hedge fund in New York City. He's 30 years old. He's making a ton of money. He's working for David Shaw, who's a billionaire and loves Jeff. And he has this idea. He's like, man, I think the internet is going to be a fundamental technological revolution. I'm going to quit my job, my high-paying job in Manhattan. He's got a wife. I think they're already married. He's got a beautiful apartment. He's got a high-paying job, right? Huge risk to go start a bookstore in the internet. Like, what the hell are you talking about? And so he's like, the way I made that decision, even though other people around me try to talk me out of it, was just like, do you truly believe that the internet is a life-changing technological revolution? Yes. Okay. So when I'm 80 years old, he tried to think, like, if I'm 80 years old, looking back, what should 30-year-old Jeff do? And so he goes, when you're 80 and you're in your deathbed, hopefully you're 90 and you're in deathbed, right? And looking back at the story of your life, you're not going to even remember that you quit your job and you missed out on your quarterly bonus when you're 30. That is irrelevant. That's important to you today. It's not important in the long scope of your life, right? But he goes, but I would regret seeing the opportunity for internet and not taking the risk to play a role in the internet. Like, if you think about it, the tagline for the Jeff Bezos, I just read all his shareholder letters. It's an episode coming out like next week. The tagline is, reading Jeff Bezos' shareholder letters is to learn from the guy, the pioneer of like the high growth internet company before any of the playbooks were written. I wrote it out better than that. But anyways, and so you realize like he's doing this at a very risky time, but he's like, if I try and fail, my 80-year-old self would be like, all right, at least you tried. If I didn't try because I was afraid, then your 80-year-old is going to be like, that's a huge regret. And so he calls that regret minimization framework. And he's like, you should be making the decisions you make today. So when you get to the end of your life, you have the least amount of regrets, because at the end of life, you can't do anything about those regrets. If you have a regret today, you can do something about it. So I thought about what Paul Graham was telling me, thought about what Jeff Bezos was saying. And this is where people think I'm fucking crazy. The way I talk about podcasting, I am a complete evangelist for podcasting. In some degree, I study the history of industries for a living, and everybody says the same shit at the beginning of industries, right? They say at the beginning of the automobile industry in America in the early 1900s, the software industry, the personal computer industry, all these industries that I've studied. I heard Mark Andreessen say this when he moved to the Valley in the late 90s. He thought he was already too late, right? They say it's too late, and the numbers can't possibly get any bigger. And if the industry is going to work, it's not too late, and the numbers are going to get way, way fucking bigger. So the way I looked at it is like, okay, I believe with all my heart that podcasting is a giant technological revolution. I call it the printing press for spoken word. I think we're sitting at the very bottom of what's going to be a giant fucking explosion in on-demand audio, right? Especially as a form of education. And so I would have a massive regret if I never at least gave a shot. I had, you know, maybe 2, 3, 5 years. I had probably like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years of savings, whatever it was. And, you know, you could manipulate that. I could take a part-time job. I could spend less, whatever, right? So you can lengthen that in different ways. And I was like, I know I'd regret this. Like, I think this is going to be fundamental, like a fundamental in like asset and importance to people's lives. And I want to play a role. And so I snapped and I was like, that's it. I'm going to do this every day. And I have not taken a day off since then.
I agree with you about podcasting being the printing press for audio, but I'm curious to play devil's advocate. If as the scale of the internet increases, as will what happens is like maybe the peak of an industry happens faster and the length of an industry happens in a shorter amount of time. It's compressed. Because all of a sudden, so many people are so you have OpenAI happening, and 1 million people are on ChatGPT for the first time in 6 days. 1 million people in 6 days. But then you have Instagram took, I don't know, 30 days. So my question to you is, like, what if the compression happens quicker for new industries?
So I think podcasting is different than this, right? They are very hard to grow, as you know. We talked right before the recording. Like, podcasting is a weird thing that people that don't podcast don't fully understand, and the people that do podcast don't fully understand, right? And that's this weird parasocial relationship that happens. I told you, like, you know, a few nights every week, I'm out to dinner with other founders that listen to the podcast. I like hanging out with other founders. I love entrepreneurship. They're like some of the smartest, most driven people. I learn a ton, and I can't believe I get to be friends with these people, right? By the time I show up for the first time we have dinner, it's like they have such an advantage over me because they know me. They have, in many cases, listened to tens, if not hundreds of hours of me speaking, right? And so you're never going to see a podcast, even if like a new podcast grows. Let's say like Barack Obama or somebody that's like already famous says, okay, now I'm going to start a podcast. They'll get a lot of people to listen, right? So let's say they get 1 million people to listen in the first week. That's those people are going to drop off. That's not how podcasts are compound. They compound, right? Where like if you look at Joe Rogan, who has the largest audience right now, somewhere between 12 to 14 million people is the estimate that I've heard. And you go back, it's like it was never like this parabolic increase like you saw with ChatGP. And it can't, because it's like people listen to your podcast, it's like picking a friend. It's like they have to get to know you, and it takes time. And so what happens is, like, I'm talking about podcasting in general will continue to grow, right? Inside of podcasting, of course, you're going to have some people that start, they stop, maybe they're good at it, they think they're, and then they stop doing the work, and so the quality of the podcast leaves or whatever. But in general, if you're focused on it, like Joe Rogan's been really focused and consistent. He's been releasing, you know, 2 or 3 podcasts for, you know, since what, 2009, I think he started?
2010. Like that,
you know? Yeah, 2010. Such, you know, 12 years, whatever the case is, that will just keep growing and growing and growing. So my point is, I just had the conversation with Ben from How to Take Over the World. It's like, yeah, when we see right now the largest audience is like 14 million, right? The largest audience 10 years from now might be 50 million. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like the business podcasts, like what I make, there will be, it's inevitable that there will be a business podcast that has 10 million people on it. It might take a decade and a half from where we are. Might be somebody that hasn't even started podcasting yet, whatever the case is. It's like, but the numbers always get bigger, and I have the unfair advantage because I study the beginning of industries for a living. And so I don't try to think of like, oh, this is how podcasting is now, it's just gonna grow, you know, 5% a year or whatever. It's like, no, it's like these things always get bigger because people, there's a smaller group of people that fundament, like, let's talk about people that use podcasting for education purposes. I'm not talking about, you know, comedians or whatever, like straight up shows or entertainment, right? Educational purposes. That number of people that understand the power of on-demand audio for education, for professional education, for entrepreneurs, investors, which is who I'm doing this for, right? That number is extremely small right now. The biggest shows, right? And I'm not talking about like How I Built This or anything like that. Like that's more like, you know, that's like a mass market, you know, diluted form of education. I'm not saying you can't learn a lot from that, but I'm talking about like the shows that are really like world class education wise. These are like small hundreds of thousands at the peak in size of audience size. I highly suspect, you know, me and Patrick talk about this all the time. I think it's inevitable he's going to get to 1 million. It's inevitable he gets to 2, 3. Because when we talk, it's like, are you going to quit? No. Are you going to quit? Nope. Okay. So then, like, we're just going to compound. Every single day, more people follow founders in a podcast network than the day before, or a podcast app than the day before. And so now you could do certain things to increase that growth rate or whatever the case is. It's just like, if you just keep going and keep compounding, and in my case, it's like, I'm not talking about the news. My content's evergreen. Like, you can go and listen. I hear this all the time. People like, hey, I got a message a couple days ago. It's like, I love this episode. I went to check. I did the episode and I asked Siri, you know, how many days ago was whatever, December, da, da, da. It's like 600 days ago. That person today, you know what I mean? Like, they discovered 600 days ago I made that episode. It took 600 days to find that one individual person. They liked it. Then they texted a friend. And that keeps on going and going and going. So I do think it's different from, like, networks or things that spread on networks like ChatGPT or, like, a social media app or anything else. You know, they are always going to take a little longer because it takes a while to get to know a person. And that's fundamentally what you're doing with a podcast.
You've said before that you've spent 6 years every day studying the business of podcasts. And I'm curious, like, what were some of the failed experiments you ran that you look back on
all of them.
and what would you recommend to a podcaster in their first 3 years just getting started?
What I don't recommend, don't put a giant paywall up in front of your episodes, dummy. Like, I cannot believe I did this. What I realized is, like, when you go and this is many years ago, it was even hard for get to people to advertise in a podcast, right? They would all say, like, you have to have, you know, 50,000 downloads an episode or whatever it is. Like, the numbers were really big even back then to be part of, like, a, you know, for to make it worth advertisers. Spotify is trying to solve this. There's a bunch of podcast networks, AdSwiss, other things that are popping up that are bundling essentially like smaller shows and then paying like on a listener impression basis, similar to like what YouTube does, right? But for audio. So back then I was like, how the hell am I going to make money on this? So I was like, oh, I'll sell this a subscription. If there's paid newsletters, it should be paid podcasts. I grind it out and you get to the point where you're making like, you can't complain because you're making like, you know, like what an attorney or a doctor in some cases makes to read books and make a podcast. So it's not like a, but it's like nothing compared to when you have a podcast that's growing and that is valuable and has a valuable audience. What ads is clearly the way to go. And this is something I learned. I like what Andrew Huberman says. He's like, I want to make the best no cost, like health and neuroscience education of the world. Right. And the way to do that is to make it freely available anywhere, you know, any podcast app, you can just listen to the whole episode and to charge money to companies to advertise. That is clearly the model that is working. I was trying to innovate on the business model. That was dumb. It wasted long. That cost me years, like literally years. And the idea that somehow the podcast, even though there's a paywall, like you used to be able to like listen to the first 30 minutes, then you pay if you want to access to all of them. The fact that even with the paywall, it still found the right people, and those right people spread it through investment. Like, because you think about all the important people, there's a lot of people that literally could change your life. They're like nodes in a network, right? And in some cases, like they have so much influence that they could just say, hey, this podcast is good, go listen to it, and that will make a meaningful difference, you know? Going on Patrick's podcast and him saying, like, one, that episode was really well received. I think it's a good episode. But also him saying, hey, I like this podcast, go listen to it. That gave me tens of thousands of more listeners. One shift, right? That had more influence. That one episode had more influence than anything I'd done the previous 5 or 6 years. Right. And even people that like have giant audiences, like Andrew Huberman, somebody was asking the question, Nate Allison or whatever.
Nat Allison. Yes.
Sorry, Nat.
He posted on Twitter who can recommend a great podcast, and Andrew Huberman is recommending it. It's got like 1,000 likes. It's just Huberman saying you're number one.
That sent me up the charts. So just Andrew Huberman saying, yo, this podcast is good, like listen to it, that sent me up the charts, right? I'm actually good friends with Andrew's business partner too, who's obsessed with the podcast as well. So like they've been unbelievably, like that's unbelievably kind. I really appreciate what they're doing or what they have done. Just telling people about it, so that made a huge difference. So business model podcast, to answer your question, don't like just make it free. Make it easy to listen to, because the most important thing is you're developing relationships. You're developing relationships. You're developing relationships over and over and over again. And then as long as you don't quit, Patrick has this term that I love. It's called infinite ROI. Where we have some ideas about how to take, like, we both have these very valuable back catalogs. How can we can repurpose that content in different ways? And essentially, we can make investments now because they don't have to pay off today, because we know we're going to be in this game for a really long time. So even if we had an idea of something now and we don't reap the benefits 2, 3, 5 years from now, it's irrelevant because we're going to be in the game no matter what. And so we can make these. That's what he calls infinite ROI, which I really like that framework. So anybody could do that, and you don't have to do it with money. You just do it with time and your content, your podcasts, right? So you put them out. You try to develop relationships with listeners over and over again, as deep as you can. And what you want is that there's going to be people that jump in and out of your podcast. They'll maybe listen to one or two episodes. Those are not like those are not the people you have to worry about. What I always say is, like, if you can extend the top of the funnel and get as many people as possible following the podcast in their favorite podcast player, right? Your podcast does the rest of the work. If it is good, it will convert them to people. When this just happened to me, I got a message from this guy. He's the CEO of a private investment company. It's been around for like 93 years. They have like $250 billion of assets under management, right? And he started listening to the podcast. And by the time he gets to listening to 40 of them, he's like, I got to meet you. And then he wound up flying me and paying me to do a Q&A with him at his company offsite. With like 40 to 60 of his managing partners, a bunch of the people in that audience also listened to founders. They are the ones that told him about it. So that's what I mean. It's like the understand that growing a podcast is extremely long, and it's just the same way you're building friendships. It's like you can't meet somebody and 2 months later be like, that's my best friend. Like, no, they're not. Like, that takes a long time to really understand who this person is, to see if you're in alignment with how they think, with that you find that the conversations that you're having, even if they're one-sided, to be valuable. And so what you want to do is like same thing that Warren Buffett said. It's like when he started taking over the role, the temporary CEO role of Salomon Brothers, when they had that big I don't know if it's fraud. There was an issue where he had to step in. I don't remember if it was considered fraud or not. But anyways, he's like, listen, if you lose, this is what he told his employees. He's like, you lose me money, I'll understand. You lose one shed of reputation by being crooked or lying or being weird or violating my trust, he's like, I will be ruthless in attacking you. Those are not his exact words, but that was the meaning behind it. And so that's what my main advice would be. It's like, I don't do anything to violate the trust of my audience. If anything, mm-hmm. I'm working way harder and way more now than even I was back then, because I've become more paranoid about violating that trust. And so that's why I'm willing to, like, you know, by the time I sit down and record and you hear the episode, I have read those highlights probably 3 or 4 times. Like, that's a lot of work and a lot of reputation to make sure that what makes it in the podcast is worth your time.
How do you get into peak state for a podcast? Like, have you noticed that there are any similarities between doing this before, other than a lot of espresso shots, and an incredible podcast episode? Are there any similarities other than just putting in a lot of work?
The work is the most important part. But yeah, I also do things. This makes me sound crazy. I run on espresso, right? My dad is Cuban. He started giving me like café con leche when I was like 5, which is like the worst thing you could possibly give. So like I take shots of espresso all day long. Before I sat down for you to talk to you, and this is what I do normal. So I had a double espresso, then I worked out. Then like an hour and a half later, we had this scheduled. So I took another, I've had 4 shots of espresso, right? Normally I record my podcast standing up. That's why I'm sitting in this soundproof booth that you can see. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting down now because I've been running and my knee's fucked up. But I usually stand up. I usually listen to, I almost don't want to say this. I listened to Jocko's rendition of Patton's speech to the Third Army, not every morning, but a lot. And it's like 11 minutes that'll get you really fired up. Because
Why don't you want to say it?
Because listen to it and you're like, this guy's crazy. Like, but I'm like super. So podcasting audio is energy transmission, straight energy transmission, right? I've mm-hmm. heard some podcasts and they're like, yes, and now and then we'll talk about it. It's like so boring, dude, where you can convey the same information and like speak with your soul. Like, I hear over and over again, the message is like, you give me energy, David. Like, I listen to your mm-hmm. podcast to get energy. I want it. Like, you were saying the other day, like, you were like working out and like listening to it, whatever.
Run through a brick wall, baby.
Yeah, there is an energy component to it. And then right before I record, I grew up listening to hip hop. It's my favorite music. Obviously, I did the Jay-Z episode, which is one of my favorite episodes I've ever done. And so I look for like hype music. I physically like jump up and down. Like I'm serious. Like this is what I do before I record. And usually that's like 5 to 10 minutes before I record. And then by that time, like I'm ready. Like I'm ready to go. And then I just stand up and go, but I don't have it scripted out. Like I don't know what I'm going to say. That's why if you can listen to the same book twice and I'm most likely saying different things and everything. Cause the way I wanted it set up was like, what if you could meet up with your friend who reads a lot once a week, and he just tells you interesting stuff that he learned from reading. And I think by making that available and on demand through podcasting app, I think that is it's valuable.
One thing I want to talk to you about was that you're the first person in your family to graduate high school is mm-hmm. something you often say, and how you're the first male in 3 generations not to go to fucking prison, your quote. Yeah. That's a crazy situation to be in. And it's something I'm curious, just like how, at what age did you notice this is not going to be my fate?
You don't know. Like when you're a kid, you don't understand that, right? Mm-hmm. So like when my dad was in jail, my brother has a better understanding than I do. But like we were temporarily homeless. You know, my mom comes from a terrible family. Didn't help them out. They're too, and you know, her family's dumber than a bucket full of rocks. So it's not like they could help her out anyways. But she would tell us like, oh no, like your dad is a cook at the jail. It's like, yeah, he cooked inside the jail, but he can't go home. Like that's not his job. And she had my brother when she was like 21. So she was young. You know, I think she had me when she was like 24, 25. And so I can't answer that question because part of this is just the way I was born. No one told me, hey, David, you should read a lot. Like I've been reading, you know, since I was like five, like all the time. But I don't think it's actually that rare. If you look at how many people in the United States are in prison, like we have the largest prison population in the world. I think on a per capita basis and overall, I can't remember, but like it was a lot. Like I was shocked when I started researching like how many people went to jail. And then like I was also shocked how many people failed to graduate high school in the United States. Mm. Like somebody's gonna have to fact check this. I remember the last time I looked, it was like a good amount, like 30 or 40% don't really get through high school. It's like we should Google it. You can, you know, let's Google this. Because that'll be like, it's how many people. I always.
High school graduation rate?
Oh, no, it's actually really high right now. It says 85% of the people are graduating high school.
Yeah, I got 90% in Texas as well.
Okay, yeah. So I don't know why I thought it was higher. So maybe maybe I was wrong. I just remember it's like when I heard the numbers, like that just can't be right. That just seems really high. But again, it goes back to what was the conditions of their family, right? Mm. There's like you can look up and down their family tree. You're not going to find. I haven't found any intelligent people. Like a second or third cousin, like you know, out of let's say there's 50 people there, it might be like two or three that actually are like you know good examples to follow. So that doesn't excuse obviously criminal behavior or anything else. It's not like they killed anybody. You know, my dad was cute. My dad was a Cuban guy coming of age. Living in Miami in the 1980s, like that's like, of course you're gonna sell cocaine, like you know what I mean? Like no, I'm serious. Like I'm not excusing that behavior. I don't do cocaine. Like I think it's obviously an unwise decision. Like, but that's like being like a nerd in the early 2000s living in Silicon Valley. You're probably gonna work in the technology industry. Like this is not an exaggeration. There's a great documentary on Netflix called Cocaine Cowboys, right? Made by this guy named Billy Corbin. He makes the point that I never forgot. It's like there's like I don't know, 7 or 10, 8 different Federal Reserve branches spread out through the United States. The one in Miami took in more cash in the 1980s than all other branches combined. Where did that money come from? Like it was a giant explosion of cocaine money that literally built Miami, right? That's not an exaggeration. That's not hyperbolic. Like that literally happened. And then you look at like his dad and his mom didn't have education. They had to flee Castro in Cuba. Like, imagine coming to, like, right now, tomorrow, somebody invades America, right? And we have to move to a country we've never been to and we don't speak the language. So it's like, again, I'm not excusing this behavior, but it's just like, as you get older, you put in more context. So I've changed this in my family. It's like, my kids both know, and, you know, my daughter being older, like, reading is important, learning is important. You know, you're gonna finish high school. Like, you should go to college. Like, you should look at learning as something that never stops. And it's like lifelong, right? But my parents didn't look at it like that. They would have been fine if I dropped out of high school. Like, you know, they'd say, go get your GED or whatever the case is. Mm-hmm. That is normal. Like, the weird thing people don't understand is like, I had this conversation the other night. It's like, we live in such a weird world where you're like around investors and entrepreneurs and, you know, these are like the top half of 1%, right? That's not a normal world. Like a normal world is like a normal job. There's nothing wrong with this, right? A normal job making $40,000 a year, not having a college degree, you know, doing what that is that's the world that I come from. That is not, people are like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened to you. No, that is normal. That is not, the exception is the great family, the high levels of education, the high levels of income. That is the exception. That is the rarity. Even if you look at on a percentage basis, to get to the top 1% in income in the United States, it's like, you know, $300,000 or $400,000 a year, right? Entrepreneurs obviously can make, investors can make, way, way more than that. But even that, like, that 99% make less than that, So the way I look at it is like, hey, you're responsible for yourself. Like, I've been rather independent since I was 15. I've been working full-time since I was 15. My dad did sit me down. He's like, listen, if you want a car, like, you don't have to pay rent, but I can't give you any money. And so he's like, you got to get a job. And I got a job at a car wash when I was 15. And I worked and I found a way to take classes through the summer. So my last 2 years of high school, I was so far ahead that I only had to go to 4 classes. And so I could leave right after lunch and go to work. And so instead of having 6 classes, I had 4. And then I got credit for those other 2 classes and made money. So I was working 35, 40 hours a week in high school, making my own money, making a good amount of money, being able to buy my own car. I continued that when I went to college, and then I'd go to school year round instead of going. Most people, like my first roommate in college when I went to student housing, his dad owned like this. He was from a very wealthy family. They owned like this giant cattle ranch in Colorado. He would take 12 credit hours fall and then spring semesters. I would take 15 credit hours fall, spring, and summer and work full time. And so this is my point being is like, I look at that as like, this is amazing. I'm glad that happened to me because it made me grow up faster, made me understand that I could influence the world around me, that I could, if I put in more hours and like focus more than my other fellow students, I could get done. I could make more money. I could get done faster. These are good life skills. So, the only thing I would change is like, to this day, my parents never mentioned the word college to me once. Like never like, oh, David, you should go to college. No, never said anything about it. David, are you going to go to college? So by them, their silence is like, everybody in high school is like, hey, you going to go to college? It's like, yeah, okay, well, I got to figure out what college I can go to. Like, you're forced to figure things out yourself, and that gives you such a unique skill set that I just think has paid off so much more as I got older. I don't think that is like a – I just don't think it's that big a deal. But when I say these things, people are like, what the fuck? I really don't think it's that big a deal.
Well, you do, though. You do think it's a big deal because you say you're going to be the first one to change. You're obsessed with people who are going to change the generation and it go from this is the way it is to this is the way it's going to be. And yeah. I feel like from listening to you, you feel like you're that person. So that is a big deal. And there's no – it doesn't help to undersell it from my perspective. I think you own it, which you have.
Yeah, so you're talking about like the founder, this idea of being a founder of the family. And again, that's not a unique idea to me.
Right.
It's in, a lot of these books where a lot of the motivation is like, man, they take a look around them like, this is not a good situation. No one's coming to save me. So then I have to figure that out. And those people, if first they have that idea, then they act on the idea and they actually solve that problem. It's like, that's, to me, is just another, like, they're training themselves. They're building a skill set. It's going to make them more valuable as they go. Like the example I always use is Sam Bronfman, the guy that founded Seagram's. Now, this is many years after he's dead. I think they're on the third generation of the family that owns those businesses. So now that decision that he had has resonated way past his lifetime and has affected the lives of his children and his grandchildren, because now they've built this family dynasty. And that dude went from like not having, I think, living in the cold, not having any not having like heating in the Canadian winters, going to school in tattered clothes. And he's like, all right, cool. That's what my situation is now. I'm going to figure a way out of this. I can influence the world around me. I can poke the universe and it changes. The world is very malleable. And that may be the most important idea of all, is how few people think that the world is something they could change. To them, life is just something that happens to them. Where I'm like, I'm building worlds. Business builders are world builders. Because yes, like, you get to build a product that makes somebody else's life better. If you do that really well and you keep improving, you do it over a long period of time, you'll build wealth for yourself. Then you can use that wealth to literally control your surroundings. You can control who you work with, who gets access to you, where you are, all this other stuff. It's like, I call that world building. And so that idea is, to me, inspiring, seeing people like, oh, that dude was in a way, Sam Brofman was in a way worse situation than I was when I was younger, right? A lot of people, Chung Ju Yong, which is the most inspiring biography I've ever read. I think it's episode 117. That dude grew up so poor. He's the son of a poor farmer in Korea, right? He literally had to eat tree bark in the winter because they'd run out of food. He had to shit in buckets, right? If you're at your friend's house, right, and you got to go to the bathroom, he's got to run all the way home. He's got to defecate in the bucket because they got to use that for like to fertilize their crops or so they're going to die. And then that guy goes from that situation. He dies the he's the founder of Hyundai. He dies the richest person in Korea. And you're going to complain? Like, I have nothing to complain about.
Yeah. It's also like you're updating your perspective and your median by spending so much time with such great people, right? It's like you're the average person. They spend their day with average people, let's say. But you're spending your day with the top 1% of the 1% of the 1%. How could that not rub off on you in some respect? Like, it's impossible for it not to.
That is actually a great point. I just reread one of my past highlights. There's this guy named Andy Beal, who's like a really secretive. He's like a banker, used to have a rocket company, did all this kind of crazy. He's one of like the, I'm pretty sure he's like one of the wealthiest people in America today, and most people don't know who he is. And he treats life like an adventure too. He's like, hey, I want to get really good at poker. So how do I get really good at poker? And it's this book called like The Banker and the Suicide King or something like that. It's in the Founders Archive. But one line stuck out for me, which is exactly what you're talking about. He's like, he played 300 hours of poker with the top poker players in the world. So he would hire. He's like, it's impossible not to improve when you're surrounded by this level of competition. Now, is he better than those people? No, but he's better, way better than he was if he was just playing with a bunch of regular people at the poker room in his local town. I think that is actually a really good point that you just made. It's like, oh, they're going to hold you to a higher standard. Like, oh, go ahead.
That's what the internet allows you to do. The internet allows you to choose and say, oh, this David guy, he's really smart. I want to spend time with him. David now becomes your best friend, and now you're learning about all these amazing people through being friends with you.
The miracle of podcasting.
Yeah. The miracle of the internet in some respect too. And video.
Like, yeah, but audio special, man.
What separates video and audio from
your
mind?
So this is something me and Patrick talk about, and the reason why I like when I knew I was going to do an ad-based public version of Founders, I called Patrick. I was like, listen, I'm going to do this on my own, but I think it should be on your podcast network. And the reason, and we had that, like the deal was done that one phone call, because we had already developed a friendship before then. And the reason being is because we had spent so much time talking about the fact that he's like, dude, I have been obsessed with this idea that audio is the best medium for education for entrepreneurs, and investors. And then we both had that idea independently. And then we meet and we're like, oh, we think exactly alike about this. And here's the reason why. Like, the people that are in his audience, the people that are in my audience, they're not sitting around watching fucking videos. Like, they're building companies. And so when the reason audio works so much, right, is because you're learning. It takes all the time in your life, right, when you're doing other things, and it turns it into a classroom. I can't tell you how many people send me. They're like, I work out and I listen to you. I'm on the plane and I listen to you. I'm going for a walk and I'm listening to you. I'm washing the dishes and I'm listening to you. I am cooking when I'm listening to you. You can't watch YouTube videos while you drive. You can't watch YouTube videos like when you're cooking. Like, you have to focus. Like, it could be in the background, but audio goes with you wherever where you are. You can't watch a YouTube video when you're working out.
Well, okay, but the nuance on this is that with YouTube Premium, you can. Right?
Yes.
And you're just listening to the audio.
I
do that all the time. Yeah.
YouTube Premium is essentially like a podcast app for YouTube.
Yeah.
But and dude, so few people have YouTube Premium.
You're right. And it's a no brainer because it turns everything when you're making me realize that YouTube Premium has turned everything for me into a podcast. And I can listen now to my favorite YouTube videos that are educational and listen to them as podcasts.
I just I become friends with John Coogan through the podcast. John Coogan is 2-time YC founder. He founded Soylent. He founded Lucy.
And he's coming on soon.
Okay, he's an incredible. He's my favorite educational YouTuber, and I literally called him the other day because I'm like, dude, you should publish the audio from your videos, as podcasts. He's like, what are you talking about? I go, I've been going for walks listening to your videos on YouTube Premium, and it works. And he's
totally.
Like, and so we were having a conversation about that. And I was like, listen, I'm going to keep going through all your videos again and listen to them. But so far, like, there, it's working. And it sounds like a very, it's, it sounds like a high quality, scripted, educational podcast for entrepreneurs. It is real, and it's short. It's like, you know, 20 minutes long, 15 minutes long, whatever. It's like really, really good. So same idea. It's like, I use YouTube Premium as a podcast app. I don't spend much time sitting around watching videos. Why? I'd read books. There's, yeah. You're not going to beat reading a book, spending 10 hours reading Sam Walton's autobiography. There's nothing better than that. Like, that guy was working in retail for 50 years. He's writing the book as he's dying because he's got cancer all over his body. And he's telling you all the best ideas he learned for 50 years. And you can make those ideas yours in 10 or 15 hours. Jeff Bezos would run around at the beginning of Amazon with Sam Walton's autobiography. He'd make all of his executive team read it. He'd hand out copies of the autobiography with certain parts underlined. That dude literally took those ideas and built this. They were instrumental in building this, you know, I don't even know what Amazon's worth now, hundreds of billions of dollars of economic value for himself and other people. So yeah, that's why, again, it turns all the spare time into a classroom. And for entrepreneurs and investors, they are learning machines. They're constantly learning. They are not, you know, these are not people. They understand the value of the time. They're not prone to waste it.
I really also liked your point about how podcasting is, the formats for it are still unclear. And it's like, I think about the idea of, like, how come there's not albums? Like, why not 3-minute songs? Mm-hmm. And 12 3-minute songs make up one album, and it's just a podcast. Like, how come that hasn't been tried yet or played around? Like, we just have this idea that this is the way podcasting is going to be, like in an hour interview show or 2 hours, but that's not necessarily the best way. And I think I admire your ability to think like that.
Yeah, because I think Founders is weird. It's like, first of all, there's not many solo podcasts, even though, like, some of my favorite podcasts, like Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, I think he's the best podcaster to live. Bill Burr is one of the first OG podcasters. He's been doing it every week for, you know, before 2010. And his sounds like some dude, your friend's calling you up and just telling you all the shit he, like, is what he did this week. It's so informal. There's no, like, that's how my show is. Like, there's no intro music. There's no production of any kind. It's just me talking directly to you. That came from Bill Burr. That's literally Bill Burr. Like, I was like, oh, that works for him. I'll work for now. Instead of me telling you what I did, like, I went to the concert or I hung out with my kid, it's what I read. And so I've been experimenting this with, like, this private paid podcast called Founders Daily, which is, like, short little, it's like 2 or 3 minute, maybe sometimes 30 second episodes every day, because that's, I need to continue to experiment. I know that we're in the early days of podcasting. To your point, we have to keep experimenting because, yes, this works. Like, interview podcasts, I like them. I listen to them. I've learned a ton from them, right? But there could also be something that there is something, some secret that is undiscovered, and the only way we're going to figure that secret out is through experimentation. I had this guy listens to my podcast named Jordan, is doing this as well, mm-hmm. where he does these short solo podcasts. Like, there's so many people I can't cover because there's no biography for them. So he'll take some unknown person that had a really interesting life that maybe most people don't know, and maybe they only have, like, a Wikipedia page or an article. And so he'll make, like, a 10-minute version of, like, this person's life story. And he's
What's
only published,
his podcast, I think, called?
He's only published one or two. Here, I got to pull it up. But I, because he sent it to me, because he's like, you know, obviously, he's like, you inspired me to do this or whatever. And I was like, dude, please do more of this. Like, this is very interesting. Diary of Humanity. Jordan wow. Joe Cooper. That son of a... That, God damn it, he's only published one. I'm going to DM him after this. Because it was a good idea. Like, that's another...
Well, that's the thing. It's like you take a good idea, and then you have to take it seriously. And that's if you expect any success in the venture, right?
And that's why people would... Even when I started, they're like, oh, it's too late to do a podcast. There's 750,000 when I first started, right? And then you know about pod fading. And then I look, and it's just like... 500,000 of them had already quit. I'm mm-hmm. like, so there's 250,000. I go, could you imagine going back to the early days of the internet when there's only 250,000 websites and have the opportunity to make your own website about whatever you're interested in? It's like, don't tell me it's too late. Even now, it's like, it's insane how few, how so much. And that's what everybody quits at everything. Like, you know, I've said this over and over again on podcasts, on interviews. This is why this dude is right there. Like, that's Ernest Shackleton. He's on my lock screen because every time I look at my phone, which I probably look at 100 times a day, I see his bearded, tired looking face covered in snow. And I look at his face and I think of his personal motto, which is by endurance, we conquer. Like, everybody quits at everything. If you just don't quit and then keep practicing at whatever craft you're doing, if you keep practicing and you do it for a long period of time, you will get better. And the better you get at something, the more value you provide to other people. And guess what? That's the basis of all the entire economy. People will pay you money, right? They will pay you money if you can teach them something, if you can save them time, if you provide value to their life in some way. Like, I just reread all of Jeff Bezos' shareholder letters. And you could, he's got a lot of great ideas, but he says, like, my main idea is obsess over customers.
Mm.
Three words. He's like, we're going to build the most customer-centric company in the world. And so that's why I went into this. Like, the reason I put so much work into founders is because I start with them and work backwards. I want to make sure when the listener presses play, it's not me, like, you know, there's all these things that get spread around social media about how, like, so many podcasts are like fluff and not signal. Mm. It's like, 40 minutes later, now we'll get into the show. Or, like, you know, they're just talking about shit that, you know, whatever comes to their mind. And understand it's a skill. So people look at Joe Rogan like, oh, it's just some guy sitting around talking for 3 hours. I could do that. No, you can't. No, because it's talking for 3 hours and making it interesting to the listener. It's not just talking for 3 hours. So I think obsessing over customers, making sure, hey, like, when you go back and listen to this, when you edit this, like, there may be parts like, nope, we can cut that part out. Wasn't interesting enough or whatever. It's like, obviously, your show, you got to figure out what's best for the listeners. So it's like, just focus on them, provide value to them, do it for a long period of time. You'll get better at it. And if you get better at it, you'll increase the value that you provide. And then that the score will take care of itself.
Mm. Bill Walsh.
Yeah.
You go back and you listen to a video, Larry Bird video about doubters. You said you've listened to it or watched it 500 to 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Why?
See, some of this stuff I should really learn to keep to myself. Because I think and the reason I bring this up to other people because I think they'll find it valuable. A lot of this is like my favorite maxim from the history of entrepreneurship is excellence is the capacity to take pain. It comes from the founder of Four Seasons. And I think a large game for entrepreneurs, I know a large part of like success for entrepreneurs is like the controlling the mind games that you have, right? You are going to, at any given time, when something goes well, like when you have you sign a sponsorship deal, you get a lot of downloads. You're going to feel like the highest form of euphoria that you could possibly imagine. And then the next day, or even sometimes the same day, you can get something bad happens, and then you feel like it's like we get the highest of highs and we get the lowest of lows, right? And every single person that has built a company, every single person has done something that's difficult, knows exactly what you and I are talking about right now. And so part of that is just building mental fortitude and strength where I know I can do this. Like, I know that I can provide value. I'm willing to work at it a lot longer than I think any, because I also have an advantage of other podcasters. And the great thing about podcasting, the game that me and you are in, it's not zero sum. People can listen to your podcast, they can listen to my podcast, they can listen to a bunch, right? So that's why podcasters help each other out. It's like, I responded to a bunch of DMs yesterday about, can you give me podcast recommendations? I don't just say, oh, you should only listen to Founders. Like, no, because I know you're gonna, like, some people listen to Founders for a little bit, then they'll jump to another one, maybe they'll come back. I know from my own personal experience, right? But part of these things that I keep, it's just like to hype myself up. And you can, passion is infectious. Ambition is infectious. Like, you can feed off the energy of other people, and that could propel you in your own domain. There's a great example in the book Snowball. I think it's in the book Snowball. Might be in the there's two Buffett biographies I read. Snowball is one, and then The Making of an American Capitalist is the other one. But this guy would spend like $1,500 to go down to the annual shareholder meeting, Berkshire in Omaha. And his wife's like, why are you spending $1,500 to hear a guy speak? And he says, because Buffett gives me energy. So he is literally getting energized from what he's hearing Buffett say. Then he comes back home and he's fueled up, right? And he applies that energy and he directs that energy at the business he's building. And so when I hear Larry Bird, who's, you know, one of the greatest to ever do it in his profession, and he's saying the critics, when I was getting into the NBA, all they told me was that, oh, you're too small, you're too slow, you didn't play against any like tough competition because you went to a tiny college. And his whole point's like, no, I'm pretty sure I can hang. Then he gets the NBA, goes to rookie camp, and he goes, oh, 3 days later, he goes, not only can I hang in this league, but I will dominate in this league. And hearing Larry Bird say, all these people said, I can't hack it, won't work. Then I trust my own judgment and my experience. I have this experience. I'm like, oh, they don't know. Guess what? Most humans don't know what the fuck they're talking about. They don't. They just blah, 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 blah. They shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. My goal in life one of my goals in life is to answer the majority of questions that I'm asked with, I don't know. The world is so complex and beyond our understanding. And life, like, how do you have, like, this idea came from this guy named Charles Kettering, who was, they called him the 20th century's Ben Franklin, right? I did a podcast on him too. He found this company called AC Delco. He was the inventor of the electric starter in automobiles. He played a huge role in the beginning of the automobile industry. He winds up being the head of research and development at General Motors, when General Motors may be, at that time, the most technologically sophisticated manufacturing company in the world. This guy he was one of the first people to commute by airplane. He was friends with the Wright brothers. He lived in Ohio and had to work in Detroit. He flew a Wright Flyer. That's like flying a hang glider, bro. Have you seen what these look like? And his daughter and his wife said, this guy's way smarter than me, way smarter than I'll ever be, okay? And they said when he dies, they're going to put I don't know on his tombstone, because that was his answer. He's like, I know, I may know about electric starters. I may know about manufacturing cars at GM. I may know about how to fly a plane. But most of the things is I don't know. And I think that to be that intelligent and yet that understanding of the limits of his knowledge is a key life skill. This is expressed by Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, where they're like, hey, stay within your circle of competence. They're like, we know the amount of businesses that we can truly understand enough to put a fuck ton of money in is tiny. And we could be very successful staying in this tiny circle of competence. But once we jump out, we know, like, we're not all, like, just because you're smart in one domain does not mean it's in many cases, it's domain specific. That's why you see a ton of smart people have this confusion. It's like, oh, I'm smart in this domain. They jump out and like, my intelligence is universal. I'll apply it to this domain. I don't think that at all. I make so many fucking dumb decisions. I'm amazed. Even to this day, like, big decisions in my life recently where I'm like, immediately I made a decision. Like, the next week, I'm like, I can't believe I fucking did that.
What's an example?
Where I was going to live. And so, like, that's a, you know, there's three big ideas in your life, like, what you're going to do, who you're going to spend it with, and where you're going to live, right? That's something I learned from Naval Ravikant, who had a huge influence on my thinking as well. And that, I just made a bad decision. Now, I can rectify that next year or whatever, but, like, bad decision. I knew it was bad, and I still did it. So part of this is like, hey, there's so much uncertainty that entrepreneurs experience, and listening to Larry Bird say, or Patton, or Steve Jobs, or Kobe, or Michael Jordan, or any of the people I listen to, or Arnold, like, it gives me energy, and I use that energy to push me forward. And so that's why I do it.
What would you want on your tombstone?
It's a great question. Let me think about it. I like the idea of having one word on your tombstone. I'm obsessed with Game of Thrones and read all the books, like read the history books, studied the family trees, read the Encyclopedia of Game of Thrones. And now I'm listening to the Encyclopedia of Game of Thrones. Like, I have a problem. This is my problem. It's like when I get into something, I can't just like, it's either 0 or 100. Right. And so I just listened to something where one of the guys sacrifices his life. He winds up dying and his brother gets his remains and buries them in their family, like, you know, where the rest of their family's resting. And he just put one word on it and he said loyal.
Mm.
So like his brother was loyal. It's like he was loyal to his family when he sacrificed his life for his family, right? I used that idea on this podcast I just made about Jeff Bezos. And I said, it's funny you asked me this question because this episode's not out. It'll be out in like 7 days from now. And I said, if Jeff Bezos had only had one word on his tombstone, I think it would be relentless.
Mm.
Many people don't know that Jeff Bezos owns the domain relentless.com. And it forwards to Amazon to this day. He wanted the name. He had a bunch of different names for Amazon before there was Amazon, but one of them was Relentless. So what would I want on mine? That's a good one. Like, and I don't think I'm, you know, there yet. I'm still improving. I don't feel I'm in my final form by any means. But Relentless is a good one.
Well, I hope to one day hopefully see a podcast episode on what you'd want on your tombstone or something like that, because I would be listening to that in a heartbeat. But I like to end these podcasts with a challenge for people. You spend some time, you listen to this podcast, you take time out of your day, and I'm incredibly grateful for that. But what action should we suggest or push people towards to do the next thing in their day? Is there any challenge that comes to mind?
You have to, if you're not already doing this, you have to start. Reading biographies is fundamental. You need to read more biographies. I'm very happy that people listen to my podcast and they learn a bunch. That's fantastic. But that's like the way I would use Founders is like, listen, you can listen to 2 episodes a week, right? They're not that long. That means, and you listen to them on fast forward speed. I heard that clip, man.
2x. Well, yeah. 2x speed. I had to slow it down so that people will be
but cognizant. I listen on 1x. Yeah, I listen on 1X because I love the medium so much. I read physical books because even though reading Kindles is faster, especially for making the podcast, I have like a love affair with books. And so I would never speed up a podcast, but I understand I'm in the minority on that. That's fine. And it's, you know, a wonderful technology. You can learn 2X faster. But the reason I would say this is like, you can listen to 2 episodes a week. Right? That means about in every year, you'll download into your brain the ideas from 100 of history's greatest founders that you can then use in your career. That the value of that is obvious, right? And if I had to explain it to you, then Founders doesn't, you shouldn't be listening to it anyways. But above and beyond that, I would say take one of the books that you discover through the podcast and read it. One book a month, dude. That is not that much. And listen to the audiobook if you have to. Read it on Kindle. I've read entire books. I got this idea from Elon Musk. He uses the Kindle app on his iPhone. He reads, you know, he doesn't always have a book with him, but he'll read an entire book. Now he's probably on Twitter way too much, but I've read entire books on my phone, right? Whatever's there. I'd read one book a month. That means you're reading 12 biographies a year. You're going to develop personal heroes. You're going to understand their life story. You're going to get good ideas for your life and career. It feeds your mind and nourishes your soul. Like, these are deep. This is not the same thing as reading a business book about one idea that you can apply to your business. It's like these ideas are tied to the personalities and the life stories that develop them. They will resonate on such a deeper level. It will make your life better, and you don't even have to take my word for it. Why did Steve Jobs read so many biographies? Elon Musk talks about the importance of reading biographies. Warren Buffett, Enzo Ferrari, Charlie Munger. You just go all of them have Edwin Land, Alexander Graham Bell, John D. Rockefeller, Andrew Carnegie, Ben Franklin. Why are some of the smartest, most accomplished people in history are all telling you, hey, I read biographies? That should be your sign. That's probably a very valuable activity. And I think Founders is a good way to discover people, just like I used Jocko's idea, right? I didn't read the book and then listen to the podcast. I listened to the podcast, discovered the book. I decided, hey, I wanted more. And so I went deeper for that. So the ask is, it will change your life. It will make you a better person, and it will make you better at your craft if you're reading biographies. And it doesn't just have to be biographies of entrepreneurs. It could be explorers, could be politicians, statesmen, religious figures, whatever it is, whatever you happen to be interested in. Just if you find somebody who's like, hey, I'm interested in that person, go grab their biography. It is worth the time that you have to invest in it.
I picked up Bloomberg by Bloomberg because of that suggestion from you on a different podcast. And I'm really excited by the love of reading is something that I felt like I had lost over the past 6 months. Mm-hmm. And because of listening to you and because of what you've preached so often, I'm like, all right, 1 hour of reading a day minimum is what I need to give myself. It's the gift I need to give myself. Even though it's something I knew I loved, it was your recommendation. It was hearing you. The way you're able to hear one thing and then go on a 70 different tangents about interesting things. I'm like, I want that. I want that knowledge. I want that database. And that's available to me. I just need to spend an hour a day reading, reviewing my notes. And that could be me too. So
yeah,
thank you for inspiring me.
No, I appreciate you saying that. That's what I love the most is like, I read way more because of your podcast. I'm an evangelist for podcasting, but also evangelist for reading. My personal curriculum is 99% books and podcasts. Like, dude, it's such an unfair advantage, because this is what Charlie Munger says. Like, if you go to bed every night a little smarter than you when you woke up, over the long term, he's like, that makes all the difference. In his case, it literally made him a billionaire, like many times over, because you have a mechanism to apply this learning, you know? And that's extremely important. The Bloomberg thing, real quick, is that book's going to fire you up, because this guy's wild. He's like, he gets once again getting fired before he starts his company. And he's talking about the motivation of starting his company. And it was like a big risk. And he says something, you're like, did I want to risk failure? Absolutely. He's like, I don't want to be a spectator. I want to be in the game, and I'm going to be playing. Like, that dude will get you fired up. He is hardcore. And fast forward, you know, 30 years later, and he owns 100, I think he owns 100% of Bloomberg. That business is worth maybe $50 billion. That dude, it's like getting a paycheck every year. That guy gets a paycheck every year in like the billions of dollars.
Oh my God.
That's the crazy thing. Like, that story is wild, and it's short, and it's like no fat. I recommend that book highly.
Awesome. So happy to hear that. That's linked below, as well as all the resources David's mentioned. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course,
man. Send people to the Founders Podcast. And where else should we send people?
That's it.
Founders.
Just find Founders Podcast and whatever podcast you're listening to this now. I'm not on YouTube yet. I will be on. Jesus Christ. People send me some messages like YouTube. I was like, I will get there, dude. Like, just in the podcast app. Podcasts are on every single phone. Like, you will find it there. But I will be on YouTube eventually. But yeah, Founders Podcast by David Senra. It's available anywhere you want to listen to.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate
it. Yeah, thanks for inviting me, man. Appreciate it. Yeah.